We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Welcome back to Overnight America. Now past 1 o'clock and got another hour left together. The world looking at Alabama right now. It's one of the major news headlines, and soon enough it'll be Missouri. As you heard there in the news with Alex Degman as well, the heartbeat abortion ban will be debated by the Senate, filibustering and all, or whatever it may take. I support it. I do. I think it's very simple for a couple of reasons why I support this. You either believe that is life or you believe it is not life. If you believe it is not life, you're denying something that actually is life for the convenience of the person carrying the life. And to me, it is a very easy moral decision. And yes, that life, do you believe, has rights? Does it have any government protection? And should it have government protection? And you know what? I think it should. And guess what? I think a lot of other people do agree, and it's time that we absolutely look at this. And when you talk about Roe v. Wade, when it was put in, the scientific evidence and what was presented for it, not nearly as present and conclusive than what we know now. What we know now about what is forming there. And yes, that is life. So the thing that bothers me the most, all the Democrats out there, not that they deny that it's life, but a lot of them don't think dismembering a life is a big deal. They think that dismembering a life is at a whim. And boy, is that troublesome. Let me play for you, and this is something I'm a little disappointed. I had to go back at the start of the midnight hour with CBS Radio. Yeah. Matt Piper, who was in this very studio during the midterm elections, he was reporting here for CBS Radio here in St. Louis. We had time to talk to him during our election coverage that night, too. Listen to how he wraps up this story when talking about the Alabama abortion bill. Hold on, let me play this.
In a 25-6 vote after the House approved it in April.
Every single one of the 25 state Senate votes cast were of white men. Texas.
Okay, what do you think that means? Why would you put that in there? Now, normally CBS is pretty good at trying to keep certain biases out. But let me ask you this. Why would you make it part of the story, the race of the people that voted in Alabama? Why would that be a story? Unless you were trying to inject your own narrative or start your own storyline from something like this. That's pretty disappointing. And that's what you're going to see. When people debate about this, like, let's look at the Democrats in Alabama. Let's play their reaction, and we'll play the Republicans' reaction. And let's see who's actually there to have a discussion about this.
You just said to my daughter, you don't matter. You don't matter in the state of Alabama. That the state of Alabama don't care nothing about you, baby. I got to go home and tell her, the state of Alabama don't care nothing about you, baby. That you can just be raped, or one of your uncles or your cousin or somebody could just rape you and impregnate you, and you got to carry this baby under Alabama law.
Republicans, you guys used to say, we want the government out of our life. We want them out of our business. We want them out of our bedroom. Now you're in my womb. I want you out. You don't control this. You don't own this.
Sad thing is, what's in that womb is a life, and by wanting that out, you're talking about literally dismembering a life. Dismembering. If you want to know what goes on during an abortion, I'm going to warn you. If you go online and you look up what happens, if you're not disgusted, then you're disgusting. I can't say it any other way. The merits of this on a moral standpoint, I don't know how. I have no idea how you can look at this and morally try to say this is fine, because it's not. And in Alabama, We need to find those places that are willing to stand up and say, life has rights. Life has rights. 314-436-7900 or 800-925-1120. Alabama GOP members on the abortion law.
A life is a life, and even if it is, its origins are in very difficult situations, that life is still precious. Life is a gift of our Creator, and we must do everything that we can to protect life.
I think everybody I know in the House, and I believe finally we saw in the Senate, understood exactly what the purpose of this bill was. We'll never get a heartbeat bill to be constitutional until Roe versus Wade is decided and reversed.
That's what's going to happen next. You know, of all the times and all the challenges of major laws that we saw over and over again during the Obama administration and then the laws that during the Trump administration have challenged over and over again, to say this is settled is not actually nearly settled. Now, this is something that has been debated over and over again. Maybe it's time now, when more states take this seriously, that this will have to go to the Supreme Court and looked at seriously as well. Roe versus Wade isn't settled and can, you know, like Bernie Sanders, for example. Bernie Sanders says it's a constitutional right to dismember a life. It's a constitutional right. And we're going to find out very quickly that, no, it's not a constitutional right. And yes, this can be debated. And yes, we can go a different direction in this. Now, if you want to say that here in Missouri, this shouldn't, we should, you know, sit this one out. We'll let Alabama deal with it. We'll let these other states deal with it. If you go to KMOX.com, Missouri Republican-led Senate is going to take up the bill to ban abortions after 8 weeks, a move that comes after GOP legislators across the U.S. Emboldened by the possibility that the Supreme Court could overturn its landmark ruling. This is from KMOX.com, heartbeat abortion ban to be debated in Missouri State. Now, even libertarians, I'm telling you this, even libertarians, the ones which just keep the government out of it, are coming out here and saying this is such a morally evil thing that we do and allow that this needs to stop. Even libertarians are okay with this. A lot of Democrats are okay with this too. You're finding that outside of the politicians, the ones that look at this and say, well, where does life begin and is there life in the womb? And does life have the ability to be protected under law? Even some classical Democrats are coming to their senses on this. And I think a lot of people in America look at this too and say, you know what? It's time. It's time we revisit this based on what we know scientifically. We know where life begins now scientifically. We know when the heartbeat starts scientifically. We know when pain begins scientifically. But instead, we decide to ignore these things, and we opt to give the option to end a life by dismembering that child. And that is wrong. You have people that have gone so far the other way in New York where they'll celebrate this dismembering. You got them lighting up buildings in New York City. You'll see them to try to argue you can do this all the way up until the baby is about to go through the birth canal at birth. In Virginia, you had the governor, a proponent of post-birth abortion. Governor Northam, if you remember, during his interview with WTOP in Washington, D.C., was asked about this when people were bringing it up in the state and said, well, I support this. What would happen is we'd give birth to the baby and then we'd make it comfortable and then we'd let them make the decision of what they want to do. You had a governor of Virginia supporting infanticide. This is why it's swung so far the other way. This is why they're fighting back and they're saying, you know what? We're not allowing infanticide anymore. We're not allowing this fantasy that this isn't a life. This needs to be looked at again. And you know what? There's enough steam for it to finally get looked at. And there's a lot of support for it. And it's a good thing. We'll take some of your calls. This is kind of a weird late night topic. Normally I wouldn't save this one until 1 o'clock, but with the Blues game going the way it did and the way we were covering the Blues game the last couple of hours, I'm going to probably have to pick this up on another day. I mean, this is something that's going to be coming down to the wire here in Missouri. the heartbeat abortion bill to be debated, and who knows what happens next. It's nothing that's going away soon. 314-436-7900 is the number, or 800-925-1120. It's Overnight America, KMOX. Overnight America continues, at least for another, you know, about 35 minutes or so. And yeah, this is going to be the big story, and I'm sure we're going to talk about this again tomorrow night, and I'm sure it's not going away anytime soon, but in Alabama, this has now been signed by their governor, which means that it's going to take some time before this is enacted, which means there could be the legal battle before, which could set up a Supreme Court battle, knowing that other states are going to be on the hook for this. Like in Missouri, for example, the part of the legislation with the heartbeat bill, which is after a heartbeat is detected, abortion is off the table unless a case where the mother's life is in danger. And that would only be enacted if Roe v. Wade is overturned or there's some kind of change in it. So this is what's being set up. It's going to be a Supreme Court review of this sort of thing, and it is not settled. And a lot of other states agree it is not settled. There's a couple of other stories that came out. Oh, how about this one over in Illinois? This is something else. So they put a study out there, and JB, their governor, decides to get this study rolling. And he ordered this study from the Department of Children and Family Services to look at what's going on with all of these recent children deaths. And some 501 children, they find, has died between 2014 and 18. Well, part of the Illinois Department of Children and Family Services. Well, at least being under their umbrella, their program itself, 501 children died between 2014 and 18. Imagine if Illinois put the same amount of scrutiny they've decided to put on the southern border, when the Department of Homeland Security or any of their other different agencies that are taking in these people that are trying to enter this country illegally and wait for their day to get in front of a judge to see if they're allowed to enter legally. And we have some people coming in with some pretty terrible medical conditions. And we don't like to see the loss of life on the southern border. But when one person dies down there, they want to use that as an excuse to overturn all of the immigration laws. And they want to use that as an excuse to back away all immigration enforcement. They want to use that as an excuse to say what we're doing is immoral and illegal down there. But in Illinois, you have the same politicians that'll ignore the fact that you have some 501 children who have died from 2014 to 2018 in their care. So Illinois has been found to have one of the lowest foster care entry rates of any state in the U.S. Researchers found a profound failure to communicate within the department, overburdened staffers. Stafford so convinced that prosecutors wouldn't agree with requests to remove children from homes, and they didn't bother to ask, in cases in which evidence and suspicions of abuse or neglect were brushed aside. This is on KMOX.com. Nowhere near the same level of scrutiny that they had from people entering the country. And the United States government doing what they can. You want to talk about being put in a position that they didn't ask for? What about these kids that were put in a position they didn't ask for, and then they ask for help? And the state says, well, we're going to brush you aside. You have abuse and neglect cases, and the state ignores it. 501 children. You know, if Senator Dick Durbin and the politicians that were very vocal of trying to condemn the Trump administration on the southern border would only leave the same scrutiny for their own state. It says Illinois is not the only state with the child welfare system under fire. You have other states that are looking into this too. The same case also illustrates just how toothless Illinois' child welfare system is. According to the report, the child's mother, who had a history of domestic abuse, agreed not to allow her boyfriend near her children, only to simply, quote, not honor the informal agreement to give her and her boyfriend further access. And then what do they find out? Well, the child is killed. At the same time, important information sometimes does not make it to the caseworker. They do a terrible job monitoring these things. And even when some of these things like neglect or abuse is monitored, it goes unheard. Department Director Mark D. Smith acknowledged that children who remain in the home after allegations of abuse or neglect are in greater danger than any other child his agency deals with. It says, Intact is the place where the risk is the highest. It's a problem. Very big problem. All right. 314-436-7900 is the number, or 800-925-1120. This will be interesting. Jim calling in from Alabama. What's going on?
Hey, Ryan. This is Jim from Alabama. Although I'm not from Alabama, I happen to live here right now.
Oh, okay. I see it. You're the city populated from Alabama, so I'm sorry.
Well, I live in the North Alabama area, but, you know, this is a very controversial issue.
Mm-hmm.
And I heard what the Alabama legislature had to say about this, both sides. Been on the news here 24/7.
Right.
But when it comes to the beginning of life, and this is my opinion, we have to go back to the scripture in Genesis 2:7.
Mm-hmm.
And this is when God thinks life begins. It doesn't begin when the legislature thinks it begins, what I think it begins, or anyone. And it begins when God created Adam, and he breathed into his nostrils the breath of life. That's when life begins. It does not begin 3 months, 4 months, 5 months, whenever. It's a tough subject. But in God's eyes, when man became a living soul in Genesis 2:7, that is when life begins. And we, you know, his ways are not our ways. And we just have to accept that fact.
Well, let me ask you this. With life being, why can't life begin in the womb then? How come that breath of life can't begin there?
Because it's not a life yet.
Why don't you believe it's a life?
It can't live. That is not a breathing life. That is a life that does not breathe yet. Go to Genesis 2:7. That says it all.
Well, no, let me ask you this, though. If you don't think it is possible to live, what about when the lungs are formed and they start breathing in the womb? They do that. The doctors look to make sure the lungs are working before its birth. Would you give it at least to that point?
No, I just go to Genesis 2:7. It's a black and white issue.
No, it's not. Jim, it is. But I don't understand how you can use the Bible to justify abortion. I really don't understand that.
I just go there when to discuss this subject and let it lay there. That's my opinion. But I appreciate your time, and I enjoy the show, and y'all have a good night. Thank you.
All right, Jim. Wow. What a weird thing. And, you know, to try to say you're using the Bible to justify dismembering of a child is a little sick, quite frankly. And when you talk about Adam and Eve and you go back to this, and you go back to the origins of the Bible, the breath of life, why can't that be conception? You know, scientifically speaking, we know that's where life originates. It's just, to me, you can't use the Bible, and anyone that's out there trying to justify biblically dismembering a life, and that is a life in there, is pretty sickening to me. I'm sorry, Jim, and I'm using pretty strong language here, and I know you're very civil about the way you're doing it, but it's just not going to fly. This is Overnight America, KMOX. Welcome back to Overnight America. Let's go to Lou, who's in St. Louis. Hey, Lou, what's going on?
Okay, that guy that was trying to use the Bible to support abortion really doesn't know his Bible. I have before me here Psalm 139, verse 13 of the New American Bible Translation. It says, "You," and it's referring to God, "formed my inmost being. You knit me in my mother's womb. I praise you because I am wonderfully made. Wonderful are your works."
Hmm. What was that psalm you said? What was
139, verse 13.
Yeah.
And
I don't understand how, and no offense to Jim when he called in or whatnot, but I just don't understand how even some of the earliest or easiest understandings of the Bible, even if it's just on the surface, how anyone could use that to try to justify abortion. I just don't understand that.
It can't be. What he's talking about is the breath of life. It's if you read Genesis, see, a text without a context is a pretext. You read Genesis, the context of that. At the beginning there, God...
It's creation of man, yeah.
Well, before that, when he created... the Spirit of God moves on the waters. It was like the breath of God moves on the waters. Breath or wind is like a symbol of the Holy Spirit because it has force. You can feel it, but you cannot see it. Mm. And it's that's what it means. And man did become a living soul.
Yeah, I guess you can look at the exact same verse. I looked it up real quick just to make sure, and it says, but streams came up from the earth and watered the whole surface of the ground. Then the Lord God formed a man from the dust of the ground and breathed into his nostrils the breath of life. So it would almost be like saying perhaps maybe man doesn't begin until dust from the ground is formed in that person. And it's just as illogical.
Yeah. Here's another verse. This is the King James Version. Jeremiah, verse 5. Before I formed thee in the belly, I knew thee. Mm. And before you camest forth out of the womb, I sanctified thee, and I ordained thee a prophet unto the nations. Mm. That's God talking to Jeremiah. Mm. Jeremiah, chapter 1, verse 5.
Yeah. Well, here's the thing. I know Jim's probably still listening, so hopefully some of that makes sense, and maybe it'll help him better form his opinion of that verse in the Bible and understanding of it.
I hope so.
All right. Hey, thank you, Lou. Good to hear from you.
Thank you. Bye.
Yeah, and that's part of the debate is definitely needs to put into context of when Roe v. Wade was first debated in front of the Supreme Court. In a lot, I mean, you go back, you didn't have ultrasounds, you didn't have all of this technology and understanding of what was going on there. A lot has changed since then, and we know a lot more about what is in the womb, and it is life. And the question is, as a society, do we recognize that life is being precious enough to be protected and have rights? That's going to be a good question. And with the Supreme Court and the way it sits right now, I understand this would be the time, if you're going to bring it up, a lot of states agree, let's get this challenged and see where it goes. There's a couple of other stories here. I'm going to have to change and save this interview for another day. You know, I had a marriage expert. I had to talk to a marriage expert, Dr. Daphne DeMarniff. Really cool conversation about maternal desire and what happens when there's rough patches in a marriage. I might have to save that for tomorrow. We just ran out of time tonight. What else do I got here? This is kind of interesting. This kind of fits in a little bit with what we were talking about. It says the U.S. birth rate fell in 2018, representing a 2% drop from 2017. It says not since the 1986 has the U.S. seen so few babies born. And I think this might just be a generational thing. I think my generation and the one that's growing up do not consider family the top priority in their lives when they hit 20. And that's such a big change from my grandparents' generation. I mean, just decades ago, that was the priority. When you became of age, you went into the service because if you're a man, you were drafted when that was still a thing. You came back and you started a family. And that was the traditional thing to do. Now, when that stopped, and I look at a lot of my own peers and my friends. I only had one friend that was married and had a child before I did. I have a lot of friends who are unmarried, do not have kids, and in some cases have zero interest in that sort of thing. And part of it, I believe, is that lifestyle goes before family. So you have your own interests, your own hobbies. You know, you like to go out, you like to party, you like to do this and that. And you see marriage settling down or even getting children as something that is contrary to the things that you do to have fun. The priority is not just put there. But according to NPR, and this is where I'm getting this article, the one they wrote up, they say it's a national problem. Dowell Myers is someone from the University of Southern California. Of course, NPR would go to the University of Southern California for a quote. It says the birth rate is a barometer of despair. It says for what's behind the negative sentiment among people of childbearing age, Myers cites the current political turmoil in a gloomy outlook of America's future. Now, I totally disagree with that. I think first and foremost, I think you have this younger generation who goes out there and they don't want these things in their lives. They want to be able to, you know, start a career, They don't see family life as something that goes above career, goes above friends, goes above, you know, partying, goes above vacationing or traveling, or goes above just whatever they're doing in their lives. They say, you know, I don't want that. You know, I don't want to use the word selfish. I'm sure there's another word that's probably better to use than selfish, but it's a totally different thing. The priorities are all different. You know, and what have we seen in the decline of putting priorities on family? What have we seen in the moral decline of our country over the last couple of decades? It's not the two things are related. There is a correlation between the two, I think. Says, not a whole lot of good going on when it comes to our political turmoil. See, I just don't buy that. I don't think anyone's holding back on having a family or children because they say, oh boy, man, it's, times are tough out there. I better not start a family. No, I don't think so. I don't think that's it. Think about what happens to the current generation when they actually want to meet someone. Well, they go online, they download these apps, they try to find instant gratification, and they don't care for the long term or whatever it is. So they're just not looking for it. They just don't care. It has nothing to do with the political atmosphere, because they're still going out and they still want to have some sort of physical touch, but you know, they don't want to have anything long term to lock themselves down with. It says from, let's see, citing conversations with people who have lost their jobs in the past decade, say some workers have resigned themselves to the possibility that they might not be able to find stable jobs again, thus they don't want to start a family. Census Bureau has long predicted that America's future population growth will increasingly rely on immigration despite a fertility rate that has historically been higher than similar developed nations, which is interesting too, which does make a case for legal immigration. I mean, it makes a huge case for legal immigration. We do have jobs that need to be filled. We see it currently with people that have entered the country illegally, but they are fulfilling jobs right now, and maybe some of them took advantage of the DACA program when that was offered to them. You know, they're doing what they can. They pay their taxes. They follow the laws. They become parts of their community. They, you know, don't get in trouble. They do all of these things that they were told they were supposed to do. And you know what? They're filling jobs that we need. And if we can't keep the birth rate up, we got to take that into consideration. You can't just take away a lot of people and all of a sudden expect that we're just going to have a whole bunch of people sitting there waiting. I mean, look at that. We have so many unfilled jobs right now. Yeah, it does all play a factor into it. But, you know, when NPR does an article on this, it's doesn't surprise me they'd quote the University of Southern California, and then they would go immediately to say, well, times are tough, and they don't like politics, so they don't want to start a family. No, I think you're just trying to project that one more time, and you're trying to hide what's really going on here. All right, one more segment left on Overnight America KMOX. One more segment left. We've got a couple more minutes here. Let's see here. I see Kesh is messaging me on Twitter, which is good. Yeah, I like Kesh. He calls in when he's in town. He lives in Chicago, but he comes down to report on the Blues. And I always like hearing from him, and he listens to us on the drive back to Chicago. So I want to thank him for doing that. And let's see. Here's the message. I'll just read this. It says, the person that called him before twisted what the Bible is saying. Instead of asking if a fetus can survive outside the womb on its own, you should be asking if the fetus will become a child if you don't kill it. That's absolutely a valid question. And I say this too. What do you think is developing there? It's what? That's the question. What do you think is developing there? And is there life in that development? And you know what? It's a debate that we're going to have to continue tomorrow when it's not so late and we're not all bummed out by the Blues. And we'll probably have more to look at as we're continuing coverage. CBS will, I'm sure, talk about it more through the overnight. I'm sure you'll get more from Phil Brooks over in the state capitol. I'm sure you'll be able to get reports from him as well when Alex Degman covers this. You know, there is one other story I've been meaning to get to, and this is from IGN. And a couple of days ago, Senator Hawley here in Missouri announced that he plans to introduce a bill that would ban microtransactions in both console and mobile games, according to The Hill. And I think this is great. I have talked about this on the show before. A lot of time these apps are geared towards children, and they're very predatory, very predatory. They prey and take advantage of children that have access to their parents' accounts, and then they charge, sometimes unknowing to the kid themselves. And you get this giant bill, and there's no way to dispute it, and you're done. It's. Let me give you a couple of examples of how this works out. Let's say you go to the App Store, and it says it's a free download, and then you download this thing. But in the fine print, it says, well, actually, it's free for 24 hours, and after that, we're automatically going to charge you $99 a week. And you think that's, no, that doesn't happen. That happens all the time. You know, a lot of these apps are very predatory, or some of them are directed directly to children, and they make it look like it's educational when really it's like very cheesy and low quality animation. And I see this with my kid because, well, you know, you see something that might look interesting for him to play, a little game that is appropriate for his age. And then all of a sudden you see him playing it and there's a little pop-up that says, oh, press this button to charge your account X amount of dollars to get this extra level or whatever. You think a 4 or 5 year old understands what they're doing? And same thing too. When it comes to these different agencies like Apple, for example, you know, it took them a long time to do this. They had the ability to have a kid's account, but in order to have a kid's account, you had to sign in with the parent's account, and they force you, if you're going to make purchases, to have credit card information on file. Now, what parents don't know is that after you confirm this sort of thing, you can immediately remove that credit card information, but parents don't know that. So what has happened? You know, they let their kid have a device, and, you know, they don't have to be like a young kid. They could be a teenager. They could be, you know, preteen, whatever it is. And they could have this game that they think is really fun. And they think, okay, it's a kid's device. Obviously, this isn't going to allow my kid to charge certain things onto the account. And little do they know, well, these apps are specifically targeting to make sure these kids get confused and either put them into some sort of subscription model or charge them directly for something along the lines of, well, here's a little, what they call a loot box, which is almost like a gamble. A lot of, you know, we can look at it as gambling too. Some of these games that you purchase into, they'll say, okay, for 99 cents or $2.99 or $3.99, you know, you have a chance to get this really cool shiny item that'll be really fun to play with inside the game, but you don't know if you're going to get it. There's a chance you do, but you don't know if you're going to get it. So you pay this money and then you don't get it. And they say, oh, try again. Oh, try again. It's like gambling. With that, they try to get you, they hook you to keep doing these things over and over and over again. And they kind of string you along. Or what about some of these games that are timer-based where, oh, you've used enough time, you're going to have to wait an hour before you can make another move. Or you can just pay 99 cents right now and just do that sort of thing. Well, imagine you're 12 and you don't realize that. And next thing you know, they're putting up this big rack and bill. So Josh Hawley, our senator here in Missouri, is right to say that these microtransactions and these mobile games and all of these things that are directed towards children are predatory, and he's absolutely right by that. Says, Jupiter Research recently released a growing industry of in-game purchases for loot boxes and things could be worth more than $50 billion by 2022. B, billion with a B. Says when the game is designed for kids, game developers shouldn't be allowed to monetize addiction. And when kids play games designed for adults, they shouldn't be walled off from compulsive microtransactions. Part of the discussion, the legislation, and this is part of the article that they wrote up here on IGN, says it's around parents being unaware their kids are using their credit cards through mobile games for in-app purchases when they mark the game as free. And then later, when the kid's playing it, they find out that they allow for them to purchase these things. In a lot of times, without their parental permission. They just puts it in there. Very predatory. No joke. I've heard stories, and this happens. They'll make these little fancy, and the purpose of these apps, they specifically make it to trick children. What happens is there's a game you're playing, and it'll say, do you want to upgrade to premium, which is, I don't know, $25 a week. I mean, it'll be something crazy like that. And the person will hit no, and they'll ask again, $25 a week, you'll hit no. $25 a week, you'll hit no. And then they switch the buttons around, so the yes and no buttons are on opposite sides. And you think you're pressing no, and you press yes. And this is the story. The kid, being a young kid, middle school, freaked out. Oh, shouldn't have done that. What does he do? He deletes the app, doesn't tell his dad. Well, 4 weeks later, you get a bill in the mail. It's over $100 because they're charging you $25 a week for this thing. And now you got to have that conversation. What happened? And I didn't approve this. And then the next question is, why were you allowed to do this? Why would the system be set up to even allow for this to happen? And it happens over and over and over again to the tune that the industry is growing to be worth more than $50 billion. How much of that is fraudulent in the sense that they've set it up for you to accidentally get that money, or they set it up for a child to be able to do this, or at least try to prey on the child? Let's see. The ESRB told IGN, the ESRB is the Electronic Software Rating Board, that they do not consider this a form of gambling. I think they should consider this a form of gambling. They want you to get addicted to these things, and they want to charge you in order to continue to play. But they don't disclose that sort of thing before you start. It's always sold to you and billed as being a free option. And then they try to milk you down the line once you start to get into this game to try to get you to pay up. That's a shame. And again, it would be a whole different story if it said, okay, this game cost X amount of dollars to play. And then once you have it, you're playing it. But it's not like that. They want to milk you for everything it's worth. And no, big game companies... Electronic Arts notoriously is known for this. They tried to change their business model. You know, a lot of other companies that have been putting out these video games, it's not just the mobile video games anymore. They put out these where the only way you can actually advance in the game is if you pay crazy amount of cash. And I think they did that recently to a Star Wars game where it was nearly impossible for you to progress unless you were to put in thousands of hours. Otherwise, you can't even play the game unless you paid extra after paying like $50 for this game to begin with. It was incredibly, incredibly predatory. And you know what? They deserve to be called out. And they are. And good for Josh Hawley for doing this. I think it's a good thing. I really do. That does it here for Overnight America. Enjoy the rest of your night. And thank you for hooking up with us here. We'll be back again. Don't forget, you can follow me on Twitter at Ryan Recker. And if you miss any part of the show, you can download the podcast at KMOX.com/ONA.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.